program and the reports of the portfolio committee. It's for some time that we have not met physically as the collective. I hope we'll have an opportunity before the end of the year, not the financial year, the year 2022, to come together as the portfolio committee, so that we can interact at the physical level. This is the last quarter, the fourth quarter, so the meeting will be a little bit longer. I will request that we try and manage our time so that we don't lose time to engage the department on some of the critical matters that are going to arise from the report, particularly around the audit outcomes, because there are some areas where we need to set the record straight around the audit, where the department has made some commitments in quarter two and quarter three. But we'll come to that matter later on during the course of the meeting. We also welcome the DG and the rest of the Rivercrats who are under the leadership of the DG. We do have apologies that Lubaba.
Good morning, Chair, and the honorable members, the colleagues. Chair, we have three apologies, Chair, excluding the two that you read in your opening.
I don't know whether. Okay, I can hear you. Proceed.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I have three, Chair, excluding the two apologies that you just read, Chair. And the first one is from the minister. She's attending the 48th Annual Forum on Intelligence on the World, Europe, and Italy. And the other apology is from Deputy Minister Marcia Khondlamini. She has bereavement. And the third one is from Honorable Mishwa, who will join the meeting later, is attending the PC on police at the moment. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, we are dealing mainly with two items. A briefing by the department on the performance, as I've said, on the African Renaissance for the fourth quarter and the department itself. And the second item will be, which is item number five, the portfolio committee, APP, and the strategic plan. And thereafter, we'll close the meeting. There's a sitting today in the afternoon at 3 o'clock. Can we have a mover for the adoption of the agenda?
I move, Chair, Honorable Mpanza.
Shom Francisco.
This meeting is being recorded.
And second, Chair. Honorable Zungu.
Thank you very much, Honorable Zungu. Thank you very much for that. We are proceeding directly now to a briefing by the department. As I said, the minister is not there. The deputy minister has got a bereavement, and the other deputy minister has just landed and will be joining us later. So we'll give the DG to do the presentation. I will request DG that the conventional things that we know, the mission, the vision, the mandate, all those other things, we can skip them so that we try our best to go as quickly as we can to the report, the crux of the report of the fourth quarter on how we have performed. That is where the discussion, in my view, should be focusing on. So you can go through some of the conventional issues without necessarily getting into the details. Honorable Dang. I don't know why I'm calling Honorable. DG.
Good morning, Chair. And good morning, Honorable.
Maybe you will be Honorable one day. You never know. I was referring to you as Honorable.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair. Maybe one day.
You'll never know. It's possible.
Thank you, Chair, and to the members of the Portfolio Committee for inviting us to present the performance of the fourth quarter for both the department and for the ARS. Chair, I'm not going to go into into a long, sort of a lot of preamble your discussions before we get into the presentations, because I think the presentations are long enough. Chair, I'm with me today. I've got my colleagues, Mr. Salome Beloy, who's our Acting Chief Operations Officer. She's going to do the presentation on the performance of the department. This will be followed by a presentation by Ms. Danae Matlako, the Director for the ARF, on the performance of the ARF during the fourth quarter. So if I can immediately then hand over to Ms. Salome Beloy to do the presentation on the department. So you will notice that the report is very long, and I've asked them not to focus on all the details, but to just focus on the key issues that will facilitate discussion by the portfolio committee. Ms. Beloy, over to you, if I may, Chair.
Thank you, DG. Good morning, Chair. Good morning to the members of the portfolio committee. I will be doing the first session of the report itself, and then I will hand over to Ms. Shamima Musa, who's also working with me as the Acting Chief Director, Monitoring and Evaluation. In terms of the report, we will be reporting on the performance information and also the financial information for quarter four of the department itself. The report will be front-loaded, obviously, with the performance information on the core function under program 2 to 4, just to enable the department to highlight the key issues and achievement in implementation of our foreign policy, and also the compliance issue under program 1 will be presented in the end in order to showcase how we actually support the core function itself. You may note that the department has actually achieved 96%, representing 26 of the 27 targets that we have, and we have set for our quarter in 4, and which means that the unachieved is actually under program 3, which is international cooperation. As previously, we have reported under quarter 1, 2, and 3, that COVID itself has actually impacted on all the operations. Also in the diplomatic operations, these relations have not been exempted from this disruption. Therefore, the report will also just highlight those. Most of our travel restrictions implemented have been lifted, but digital diplomacy continued. You will see in terms of the report how we actually managed to actually be able to move over to be able to implement some of the targets that we are able to share with the portfolio committee today. Without further ado, I think in terms of the reporting of the performance itself, I will just hand over to Ms. Shamima Musa, as I mentioned before, so that she can just run over it as the DG has actually requested us to. Thank you. Shamima.
Thank you, Ms. Beloy. Good morning to the chairperson and members of the portfolio committee, the DG, as well as their co-officials in the meeting. If we're looking at what Ms. Beloy has indicated, that we will start the presentation off with program 2. And we're looking at our 4 targets there. If we can move to page 6 of the presentation. Thank you. So the 4 targets that we have with regards to reporting is trade, tourism, is political, investment, trade, and then tourism. Under political, the structured bilateral mechanisms and the high-level visits have been much of the reporting for the political report. For investment, head office and missions in the regions as continue to explore investment opportunities for South Africa. And trade for the fourth quarter, the economic activity was not as yet normal due to the COVID issues that have already been alluded to. And tourism, as we know, was always identified as a tool for development. And there was not much of the tourism activities that have happened during the fourth quarter. However, we do have comprehensive reports on the initiatives that were undertaken. If we go through political on the slide 7. For structured bilateral mechanisms, there were several of this in Africa, Europe and Americas, as well as the Asia Middle East region. In Mozambique, we noticed that we had the third session of the South Africa Mozambique Binational Commission, and here it was the implementation of the decisions that were made in the previous session. In Nigeria, we've had the consular migration forum, which was held in January. For the high-level visits in Africa, we've had Kenya, which was a benchmarking visit by our Minister of Tourism, and in Uganda, it was a visit by the Industrial Development Corporation. In the Indian Ocean Islands, it's the Presidential Special Envoys, as well as the Deputy Minister of International Relations, Mr. Boetis, with Ambassador Nhlapo, who traveled to Madagascar. And here it was to meet the heads of state, the respective countries, and deliver the president's message with regards to the displeasure at the travel, on the travel ban. In Cape Verde, it was an engagement with our Ambassador Bongi Kwabe. In Africa, we note that, in continuing with Africa, there was also in Guinea-Bissau in Nigeria. For the Americas and Europe region, which is on page 11, we know the high-level meetings between the Biden administration and South African government to discuss the ongoing crisis in Ukraine and the issues thereof. In the Flanders, it was the seventh meeting, and here the Minister President of Flanders scheduled a visit to South Africa in April this year. For Ireland, it was a JCC which took place in February, and in Canada, it was a teleconference between our President and Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. In Belgium, we note that the President participated in the AU-EU summit. In Germany, the minister attended and presented at the 58th edition of the Munich Security Conference. In Norway, we know that Deputy Minister Boetis undertook an official visit. In Sweden, it was also the same. It was on the same trip. Minister Boetis undertook an official visit there as well. And in Ukraine, we just have a report on the political developments in the quarter, which was dominated by the situation in the Ukraine. If we go on to the Asia Middle East region, in Sri Lanka, engagements took place during the South Africa Sri Lanka 8th session of the Partnership Forum. In Nepal, South Africa hosted the inaugural bilateral consultation with Nepal. In South Korea, South Africa and the People's Republic of Korea signed an MOU on diplomatic consultations. And also in South Africa, we will monitor the developments, in particular foreign policy issues in Korea following the general elections that took place during March, which is within the quarter. Then in China, there was a heightened lockdown issues that we have dealt with as a department from the Chinese there. If we go on to the next target reflects on investment, and we've engaged various domestic stakeholders and departments, as well as within our missions, in order for us to be able to achieve on this particular target. If you know that in the previous APP, which ended in March 2022, this was a separate target. However, for the 22-23 year, we have separated these, combined the target of trade and investment. So the report is much more lengthy for quarter four. Under Africa, ZERCO engaged various domestic stakeholders, which I've already indicated. And then here we look at the mission in Zambia. There were several engagements with regards to investment opportunities, including issues with the airlines there. In Zimbabwe, there was a high-level potential visit. And in Senegal, we note the interaction with the Traction Group, a South African company that operates there. In Guinea-Bissau, the mission met with the CEO of MTN, and and indicated that economic situation that is directly linked to the political stability of the country there. Mali, our mission met with the CEO of Keys and Markets and various other business interlocutors in order to report on the investment opportunities in the country. In Benin, we have had a high-level delegation from Transnet, which visited during March this year. In Cote d'Ivoire, Wescro hosted a wine tasting event in Abidjan. In Chad, we note the trade and investment opportunity, which was for the SAO, for an identified company in South Africa. In Egypt, there was meetings held during January 2022 with a particular, in particular with the Helion Fish Farm, as well as with the Department of Agriculture there. In Mauritania, we've noticed also an event which assisted in our investment opportunity initiatives. And for Americas and Europe, we know for Sweden and Finland, during the visits of Deputy Minister Boertes in Norway and Switzerland, he engaged with the various business communities to encourage trade and investment to South Africa. Where the Netherlands, there was a visit by the Flying Swans Consortium during January. And this consortium comprises of agro-logistics parties and has entered into multi-annual partnerships with Transnet and Fruit SA. In Argentina, we note the attendance of the Expo Agro in March. And here it was to see cooperation between the two countries with regards to investment. The Czech Republic, there was the fourth investment conference, which realized commitments that were amounting to 332 billion. The Russian Federation, there were meetings with stakeholders which took place there, such as the Rus Hydro Investment Initiative. In Austria, there was meetings with the Chief Executive Officer of Triolet. In Netherlands, we have also further engagements with regards to investment, and this is associated with our media, and the initial investment is in, here is estimated at 1.1 billion. If we go on to the next slide, which is Asia Middle East. Here we look at the four countries here, which is South Korea, China, the UAE and Kuwait. And India, we note that there were various initiatives undertaken during the quarter. However, it has been summarized in terms of all of the initiatives. Under trade, we've also here engaged with our various domestic stakeholders as well as within our missions abroad. And for Africa, we note the trade reports reflected largely the work of the following countries. I'm going to go through these ones quite quickly because much of it has already been covered by investment as well. It's Angola, Eswatini, Zambia, Mali, Liberia, Mauritania, Egypt, and Algeria. In Americas and Europe region, it's the Sweden and Finland. It's the USA, Chile, Cuba, and Germany. And for the Asia Middle East region, again, it is Qatar, Malaysia, Vietnam, the UAE, Hong Kong, and Taiwan. If we go on to tourism, like we have said initially in the presentation, there were a few efforts with regards to tourism. However, many of the countries were still on lockdown at that particular point in time, which was January, February, March this year. So we have had initiatives from our missions in Africa, and these are Mali, Algeria, Tunisia, Eswatini, and Egypt, Malawi, and Zimbabwe. In the Americas and Europe region, it was Brazil, Chile, the Russian Federation, Portugal, and the Czech Republic, as well as in Chile. On the next slide. So that brings me to the end of the reports that we've received on Program 2 for bilateral relations. If we move on to the next slide, now we're looking at Program 3. We note here that we have had targets across all four sub-programs, which is Program 3.1, Global Governance, 3.2, Continental Cooperation, 3.3, South-South, and 3.4, North-South. We also note that our only non-achievement for the year resides in Branch Global Governance 3.1, And this was the implementation report on the approved and the implementation progress report on the approved strategy. The report was not the strategy was not drafted as indicated in the previous quarters, and this work is to be concluded in the second quarter of the current financial year. So we received three key reports from global governance, and the one is on peace and security, and then it's on human rights as well as economic and social development. On slide 37, we note the branch undertook several initiatives in support of peace and security during January to March 2022. But I'm just going to highlight the outcomes of these events. So South Africa participated in all the meetings of the General Assembly and abstained in voting on all three of the resolutions. South Africa's approach has been detailed in the statements delivered at the meetings of the General Assembly, in which it has indicated that it is not indifferent to the unfolding situation in Ukraine. There has since been no outcome to the meetings in the UN Security Council as at that particular period of time, and the three resolutions was adopted, which South Africa abstained from all three. The approach adopted on this matter was in line with South Africa's foreign policy objective of contributing to a safer and more prosperous region, its continent and the world. We look at the report on peace and security. Through its participation in the Peace Building Commission, South Africa's approach in line with its strategy on peace building was to emphasize the importance of having nationally owned and nationally led efforts in peace building initiatives, the necessity of enhanced partnerships between the African Union regional economic communities and the United Nations, predictable and adequate financing for critical peace building activities, and the monitoring and evaluation of performance and effectiveness of institutions by national stakeholders. Then we have on slide 41 outcomes of the open debate in the UN Security Council. I will take that as read and go on to slide 42. Slide 42, which is the human rights report. Here we refer to the participation, Africa's participation in the events as listed. And for the next slide, 43, we have economic and social development, and we have the participation in the African Union and the European Union Summit, the United Nations Environment Assembly, that is the first session, as well as the one target that we have here is our representation in our 60 positions. We note that these are at country level, and for the quarter four, the 60 positions were maintained. If we go on to slide 45 refers to continental cooperation. Here we have received the monitoring report on South Africa's contribution to the operationalization of identified agenda 2063 flagship projects, and we have had an assessment report reflecting how the partnerships are aligned to the AU Agenda 2063. So these are comprehensive reports that are available at departmental level. Under South-South cooperation, here the target refers to a large component of the participation in the BRICS structure, and there have been reports here on political and security, economic and financial, as well as people-to-people cooperation. On slide 47, we note that also through the BRICS Summit, we have deepening practical cooperation in all fields, and this is fully implementing the outcomes of previous summits and ensuring that concrete results are achieved. We have enhanced dialogue and cooperation with other emerging markets and developing countries, as well as international organizations, to broaden South-South cooperation for common development and prosperity. And then North-South cooperation, we note the one event, which was the AU-EU summit, which was convened in Brussels, with the aim of strengthening and recalibrating the economic and strategic partnership between the African and European countries. There is an extensive report on the outcomes of this particular summit. That is, the detail of that is on page 49 and 50. On slide 51, we note the North-South cooperation, and here we refer to the TICAD meeting that has taken place. And here we also find that the main outcomes of this ministerial meeting was Japan's commitment to promote private investment in Africa, including through leveraging digital technology, continued support on ensuring access to vaccines in Africa, as well as a strengthening of maritime law enforcement capabilities and supporting the reform of the UNSC based on a common African position. That brings me to the end of the reporting on Program 3. And as I've indicated, we have comprehensive branch level reports on all of the identified targets and achievements against the targets available. If we go on to Program 4, Program 4 overall achievement there has also been 100% for the quarter four, and we note the same sort of the same achievement from quarter one to quarter three. We have 14 sets of key messages that were distributed to missions and head office on domestic and global development. We've had three public participation programs held by political principals. And we've had 30 media statements which were published in response to both international and national developments. And we've had the three opinion pieces which were published during quarter four. Under state protocol and consular services, these are all responsive targets, and we find that we have had 9 of protocol services rendered during our outgoing and incoming visits. We've had 248 consular services rendered, and with legalization, we've had 14,593 documents legalized during the quarter four of the reporting period. If we go on to Program 1, we've indicated that we will report on this in the end. Program 1, we have four progress reports on the implementation of the digital strategy as the annual target. We have received the report for the fourth quarter, and the report was against the strategic objectives of the digital strategy. And here we know that our laptops and desktops were received in January and distributed to head office officials. And the risk assessment against the automated digital business processes was finalized. There was a progress report that was delivered on the audit action plan. And we note that this has significantly assisted us in terms of the outcomes of the audits that we have had for the 21-22 year. We have a status report on the collaboration with partners to enrich training programs of the academy. And these are around the MOUs that were concluded during the quarter. With outreach initiatives to change behavior in relation to gender, we've noted the two outreach initiatives. This was a participation in meetings for the Convention on the Status of Women, which was held in March, as well as we facilitated and hosted a solidarity dialogue for women in conflict areas during March as well. On the strategic interventions to strengthen the capacity of DIRCO to effectively and equitably implement the white paper on the rights of persons with disabilities, we have had one strategic intervention, and we've organized and facilitated an intervention to effectively and equitably implement the white paper on the rights of persons with disabilities. And this was done during March 2022. Here, participants were informed on the, and empowered on the effects of tax to persons with disabilities. If we go on to the next slide, which is slide 61, here we refer to the legal advice and services that were rendered by our OXLA unit. There have been 45 responses for advice and assistance on international law and 82 on advice and assistance on domestic law. Thank you. I now hand over back to Ms. Baloyi.
Thank you, Ms. Musa. I will then just take you through the financial report. In terms of the financial report, the details are on slide 64 and 65, and the expenditure at the end of the quarter is as such, as it outlined on slide 64 and slide 65, and we, as a department, we take them as read by the committee. In terms of the action plan, which was requested by the portfolio committee to be included in this report, we say with regard to the action audit plan itself, the department has dealt with all the causes of the findings and we are now finalizing the new action plan, taking into consideration the current audits that have taken place. So because now we are actually drafting the new audit action plan for financial year 23 and 2223. Thank you very much. Thank you. I'm handing back to the DG.
Thank you, colleagues. Thank you, honorable members. That's the presentation. Our colleagues did go through it quickly because it was a very lengthy presentation. So, Chair, over to you for questions from members. Thank you. Yes.
Yes, I thought they will go via you.
Okay, thank you, Chair. No, they've completed the presentation. I'm not sure, Chair, if you want the ARF report now and then have a discussion afterwards, or you want to have the discussion on the big report now, on the department's report before the ARF report.
Yeah, the approach agreed to by the committee in the past was that we must discuss them separately.
Thank you, Chair. That concludes the report. So from our side, so it's up to, we will engage with questions and comments now.
Thank you very much, DG and the team. Honorable members, there's the report, the fourth quarter for the department. We can now engage with the report. Honorable, I'm trying to look at the hands here. Honorable Darkman, followed by Honorable Mpanza. Dada Darkman, can't work.
Chair, thank you very much. I must say that we didn't put the bar too high on this report card, and you know, it's a pity because I think with the new DG, I like to set the bar high because I expect a lot from the new DG. And I must say that I really believe that we have a good opportunity here for international relations to really shine. The problem is that we've just released the national interest document, and we've now got to look at what the quarterly report of this fourth quarterly report and the national interest documents, you know, if we look at what the two are trying to achieve and we look at the targets, we'd say that we're almost a mile away from each other. And I'm just going to start with program two as an indicator, so to speak. Let us look at the possibility of a grey listing. That's not a possibility. I think it's almost there. Grey listing will happen, according to Sim Chabalala, the CEO of Standard Bank. Grey listing could happen as a threat if South Africa is suspected of facilitating the funding of terrorist actions. The payments, the harboring of payments of terrorists. I don't believe that South Africa or the ministers within South Africa have done much to transcend the different departments to curtail this. And I think when you look at foreign affairs, you know, we look at things like the people that would judge us on the grey list, how are we provoking that sentiment, or how are we provoking the ideas of such? So let's say, you know, when it comes to Russia and the sanctions on Russia, how is South Africa seen when ministers visit Russia, when we allow airplanes from Russia to land in South Africa, or we allow workshops in South Africa from Russia? We host terror groups, potential terror groups that are on the list, on the grey list in South Africa. When secretaries of state visit South Africa and we adopt an arrogant attitude towards them. According to Cynthia Balala, grey listing could be worse than a downgrade from Moody and Finch. Now, that already, our concern would be for the economic pocket of the man on the street. And I'm sure that every single person in this committee should be concerned about the average man on the street and their pockets. And this is the kind of thing that projects or program two should be concerned about, is how we facilitate around program two, in, of course, in that regard. Then we talk about tourism. And again, I look at visas and I think to myself, well, hang on a second, because what have we done through the transcending the Home Affairs department to get visas facilitated quicker? You know, we look at the diplomatic bag scandal. Well, I don't want to say scandal, it's an alleged scandal, but we look at the delays in the diplomatic bag tender. We look at the shambles within the diplomatic bag. We look at how long it's taking to issue visas. Quite frankly, South Africa shouldn't even be charging for visas in certain countries, because Malusi Gigaba, when he was minister, promised certain countries that they would be visa free, or they would be on the e-visa list. That hasn't even come to fruition. A country such as Georgia should already be visa free. Why are they still battling with visas at this stage? There are many European countries that are still being charged with visas. What are we doing from an international relations point of view to either get these visas e-visaed or to actually do away with those visas? We're stopping people with specialist skills or knowledge, or people that are coming in tourists, wanting tourist visas. We're stopping them from coming into this country because we can't process these visas quick enough, or we can't deliver diplomatic bag to those countries quick enough. And again, this is a poor reflection on DIRCO when it's not even their department. This is another department, but it affects our outlook. And this is something that our minister needs to engage with another minister to assist our new DG in his image. Because again, it's something that our DG is going to inherit a legacy that, quite frankly, he doesn't deserve. We then look at something like Program 3. Very sensitively, we're looking at something that, we're looking at the RPU visits. We know that our speaker was invited to the RPU. This was the visit to Ukraine and to Russia. I see that wasn't necessarily put in the fourth quarter report, but a lot of the Ukraine-Russia was put in the Ukraine report, and I think we've tried to balance ourselves in as on the right side of the or history or human rights. Our concern has never been about where we balance on the human rights or taking a side at the beginning. We've always said from 2015, 2016, the Democratic Alliance was always on record not for South Africa to take a side then. It was always for South Africa to use its proximity to President Putin and to the West to de-escalate its proximity, to de-escalate the escalation that was taking place on the Crimean Peninsula, and then of course to use what was taking place on when it was the encroachments on the borders in the Donbas region, to try and use the proximity to the presidents again and the West to de-escalate that aggression. But now, when we're looking at the loss of life, when we're looking at what is now causing a further disruption to the economy, the global economy, it's not for South Africa to take a stance on a person, you know, on a country in terms of where they belong in BRICS. It's for them to take a stance on what would have an impact on the pocket of every person in South Africa. And that's the stance that we're pushing for South Africa to take a stand. And when we say that South Africa must take a stand, even every country in BRICS has asked Russia for a concession on whether it's Brazil on fertilizer or whether it's India on fertilizer, Brazil on gas. Every single country has got a concession from Russia for their votes or for their utterances in the UN, except for South Africa. South Africa is the only country in BRICS that does not benefit from being in BRICS with Russia at this point in time. So at this stage, we also have a hypocrisy in terms of how the ambassador of Ukraine is being treated in South Africa when it comes to what we say and what we do in terms of where we say we are in the war with Ukraine. So again, I don't think the DA's position should be misunderstood, but I do believe that South Africa should be very clear, especially with the release of this national interest document, which is trying to create a return to the national development plan and provide clarity to what is to human rights and to bring tourism, to bring national foreign direct investment. I think our stance is pretty much against all of that. I then want to just on the program four, I want to just bring your attention to the targets on legalization and our consular services. I think it's in poor taste to say that our legalization is at 100%. And I'll tell you, I've had my own personal experience, but let me cushion this with first by saying that the DG's office and the Deputy Minister's office were exemplary in trying to assist me in my own personal issue with legalization. But in my own experience, and I do appreciate that, and I thank them for this, but in my experience of trying to find out what was going on with legalization and trying to get a document legalized, there were stories that I heard from people within the departments on different levels and in different departments. Chair, this would make the hair on your neck stand up. There's victimization, allegations of victimization, subordination. There's allegations of people getting paid salaries that do not come into work. I would love for you, Chair, to call this department, summons this department to Parliament. I would love for you to do an exercise of finding out key access, looking at how many times all these directors, deputy directors report to work. The turnaround times on the legalization of these documents. I've been told about monies in documents, allegations of monies in documents. There is something not right. And I remember the days since I've been in this committee where legalization took place on the day, where you could walk into the department and they would legalize your documents on the day. I've often stressed in this committee that I know they're understaffed. I know that they work under immense pressure and that we needed to assist them and we needed to oversight this department and we needed to see whatever we could do to support this department and to support the DG in enabling this department to do better. But we are now going into 6 to 8 weeks to get one document legalized. Chair, that is now infringing on people's rights in the Constitution, rights to get jobs, rights to their own safety if they needed to legalize documents in, cases that might be abroad. This is not on. So, Chair, I would like to propose that we do summons the legalization department to explain what is actually going on in this department. and to find out if there are any disciplinary charges that are actually within this department at the moment, and what these disciplinary charges are, and the nature of these disciplinary charges and why they are about. And I think you will find something rotten in this department. In fact, I would urge the DG to take this, and the minister to take this up as a pet project to clean up the legalization department. And secondly, within program 4, the diplomatic bag. We cannot carry on with the diplomatic bags the way they are. We cannot have documents taking over a year to get to embassies. We cannot have embassies like Amsterdam not answering their phones, not being available for people in for people to stand in lines to get told that there's no service. There should be an audit on how many of our missions are currently open and accessible to people at this point in time abroad. How many of people working from home? How many can offer consular services, or how many have actually just shut the door because they're so embarrassed about the diplomatic bag that they cannot actually offer a service? Then the real targets, not these 100% pat on the back targets that don't make sense, the real targets would come out, Chair. So I believe, again, a resolution should be that we summon the head of consular services to actually come and account to how many missions are currently running from the missions, how many are open, how those turnaround times are looking with the diplomatic bags currently, where the diplomatic bags are in the process in terms of the tender. And then lastly, and to give the last, I've been prompted to ask about the one that we breezed over, the program with regards to the Middle East. It's seems like we had the head office meeting with all the branches except for Israel. Now, I know what South Africa's position is on Israel, and I obviously would appreciate more of a two-state solution, and I would appreciate that dialogue, which is the position of the national interest document, is always a better way to seeking peace, where the Democratic Alliance is all about peace and human rights justice. I would want to know, would it not be better, where most of the countries in the Middle East have peace with Israel, would it not be better to have Israel in these meetings where you could have a mediation, a possibility to mediation, a possibility to better dialogue? Would it not have been better to have invited Israel to this type of meeting? Thank you very much.
Thanks, bye, thank you, the Honorable Darkman. Just repeat the last part on Israel mediation meeting. I lost a bit of contact there. You were making some recommendation on mediation, so my network was not very,
Sorry, I was just saying that as a peace lover, as someone that's trying to seek peace between the people of Palestine and Israel, would it not have been better, with most of the Middle East countries already enjoying peace with Israel, Lebanon, Jordan, Syria, Egypt, would it not have been better to have invited Israel to that head office meeting in the Middle East, so that you would have, in line with your national interest document, that we would have had dialogue, that South Africa could have had an opportunity here to mediate? Would that not have been just a better solution? Was rather to invite them and to, you know, engage in dialogue rather than send a message of ignorance or sanction and not have them invited, which shows that you're completely on one side and against the other when you still have a trade relationship. Thanks very much.
Okay, no, thanks. I understand you now, Honorable Ahmad. Dr. Mbanzi.
No, thanks, Chair. Let me apologize first. I'm on the road and on the side, so there might be some sound of the cars parking, passing. Chair, one, I just want to welcome the presentation. by the department. And safe to say, Chair, I think the targets, as we have alluded to sometimes ago when we meet, have not yet met the expectations of the committee. And in particular, with regard to them being aligned in what we call the SMART principles. But having said that, I think I can say that there seems to be a movement towards improving from the department. So I cannot say everything in the department is doom. Of course, yes, with the new DG, Mr. Dango, at the helm now on a permanent basis, not acting, we will be expecting much more from the department in terms of its performance in meeting the targets. I also, Chair, agree to a certain extent with some of the points that were raised by the previous speaker, Honorable Bergman. But I think while at the same time we are raising the issues, but we must also guard against also venturing into party ideological positions in this committee. Because I don't think that is going to assist us. Because we have different positions from our organizations. But what guides us and what supersedes all that is the position of the country, which is informed by South African foreign policy. And I think it would be a wise thing for us to stick to that, because it represents all of us irrespective of the political parties that we are coming from. And also, we should also guard against also venturing in what sometimes they call overreach into more operational issues of what is happening in the department and people from the department coming to us and all those things. So ours is to oversight the department, to oversee the department and ensure that we hold them accountable without entering into their operational activities. Of course, one of those oversight expectations would be for them to implement consequence management. We have raised that many, many times. So, Chair, I'm going to be broad in my discussion, is that at a political level, and we have always emphasized this, at a political level, I think the department is doing relatively well. With the presentation that was taking us to different regions where missions are. And I think there seems to be some stability there and some improvement. I think the department must work very hard on the administration side of things, the programs, particularly the administration. Hence now, the issue of the computers or IT is now resolved. I think there must be really, really improvement. Because, Chair, why I'm saying that, this department at this point in time, as far as the audit outcomes, if I'm not wrong, I think it's still sitting in the on a qualified audit. And we have been asking the department to work very hard in making sure that we change that image. It's a bad image for the department, big as our department, international relations and cooperation, all the time to be found wanting when it comes to audit outcomes. Now we see that they perform up to plus minus 96. It's quite an improvement. But I think, Chair, Mr. Dango, you as a DG, at least one thing that you can do us a favor in this financial year, work at least, even if we can get an unqualified audit, yes, with maybe some emphasis on other things, then at least we can see that, no, the department is turning the corner. And then maybe the next financial year, then you achieve a clean audit with no emphasis of anything. Now, Chair, that is the area that I think we should look at. Then the other issue that is disappointing when it comes to our department is the underspending. I was very much disappointed when somewhere departments, we were told this department and that department has underspent. And I didn't think that international relations would be part of that. But to my disappointment, then international relations is included. Now, underspending is a serious, when we are faced with many things here in the country. Issues of unemployment, issues of poverty and inequality, and then you have a department underspending. Then I think, therefore, on that one, really head must roll. Those who are contributing to the department underspending must be held accountable, and then consequence management must be implemented without fear or favor. So that area is very much, because underspending is as bad as over expenditure, because sometimes the over expenditure contributes in irregular expenditure if people have not followed the due processes in terms of the auditing principles. The last issue, Chair, that I want to check also. How far is the department with the program of reducing the emissions, which we have emphasized that exercise is fine, it can happen, but it should not be done at the expense of the African continent. I know that there were also emissions that have to be closed. I don't know, I think the one in Berlin, and other areas, and how far is that process, and how far is the process also of improving the working conditions and the living conditions in our missions? Because in the oversight that we have conducted last year, I think we spent almost two nights, finishing almost midnight. The picture that was painted there was not good. And the recent visit by our colleagues, Chetty, Honorable Chetty Ngosi in Namibia, also did not paint a good picture. So now, since we have the Foreign Service Act now in place, which we can now use to hold the department accountable, how far are they moving with that program, and also the process of implementation now, the act? We were told that, I don't know where it's gazetted now, so we're happy, but one other issue, Chair, that we have raised is the issue of regulations. When are we going to get these regulations so that will help us? And then the implementation plan also, we are not getting any information on that one, because we said they must produce an audit plan with clear time frames, how they are going to implement these things to actually address the AG's concerns, the recurring findings all the time. So, Chair, yes, there is improvement, but I think going forward, the department must just put up the top gear, the speed at which they are moving in addressing some of the issues that we have raised is not pleasing at all. But let's give them the benefit of the doubt with the new DG that maybe he will find his place and then start now moving this slow department. The truck that is driving is a very heavy truck, but it will have to put more speed for it to move to meet our expectations. Thanks very much, Chairperson.
Thanks, Honorable Mbaza. I don't see any other hands from other honorable members. So I take it that they are content with the presentation. Just before we give the department to respond, from my side, you're welcome, Honorable Deputy Minister Elvin Bottas. We did get an indication that you'll join the meeting a bit late because of the flight problems. I think we have been raising with the department a matter that relates to what is in the Constitution of the Republic. What is in the Constitution of the Republic is about building a non-racial and a non-sexist South Africa, but also dealing with injustices of the past. So the committee was very clear that one of the specific issues we have to deal with, in as far as what the Constitution says is injustices of the past, are the economic imbalances that exists between different races in this country. The gap between those who are rich and those who are poor. The poor, the majority are black. And those who have, who are rich, the majority is white. And we know it just by design. That's what we said in the past. It was by design from both colonialism and apartheid. And that the new democratic South Africa, collectively, both black and white, have agreed to deal with this problem so that future generations, we do not inherit this from the current generations. They can live in a better South Africa. That was the agreement. And we said to the department, please, when you look at investments, for instance, try and indicate to the portfolio committee the extent to which investors from South Africa in foreign lands and foreign direct investment into South Africa are helping us to address the problem which constitutes injustices of the past, which are economic in nature. We also said you must be able to indicate how these economic activities between South Africa and the rest of the world is helping us to overcome the challenges of building non-racialism and building non-sexism so that women in the process could be empowered. So I see during in the presentation, we talk about this company and that company having done this, whether it's the pipes or infrastructure somewhere in the world and so on. And Honorable DG, we haven't yet come to the specifics which we requested the department to get into. Because we are not going to, I can assure you now, we will never be able to change the status quo if we do not do quantification. We will do assumptions, and future generations will be bequeathed with a South Africa, possibly economically, which is worse than what we inherited from the apartheid colonial system. Under this broad guise that there's democracy now in South Africa, the statistics, including those that have been released today around poverty, continue to indicate that Black people in South Africa continue to be the worst hit in as far as poverty is concerned. South Africa is continuing to be a more unequal society. So if we are going to continue to celebrate like we are celebrating in this report, correctly so, investment by South Africans abroad, including in the African continent, in infrastructure and other things like agriculture, and we don't get into a reflection on the details of the demographics of South Africa, which are a reality, I don't think we'll be doing justice to the people of this country who pay tax, because they need to see whether we are maintaining the status quo economically or we are changing the status quo. There's somewhere in the report, for instance, where we talk about opportunities that may accrue to the banking sector in South Africa as a result of working with other countries. And we know that the banking sector remains one of the most untransformed sector in South Africa. So please, going forward, can we get those disaggregations? Yeah, can we get them? So that as a committee, we can be able to say to the people of this country that indeed, all of us, black and white, are indeed making progress in closing the gap between the black and white in as far as using foreign economic opportunities to close that gap is concerned. So please, I will request that we attend to that, because it's not there in this report at all. It's zero. Zero, zero. There's no reflection on how we are using those opportunities to try and change South Africa for the better in as far as the economy is concerned. That's my first point. The second point relates to this matter of ICT. And in summary, there's no consistency between what you said in quarter two and quarter three and what you are saying in quarter four. That relates partly to what Comrade Mbanza, Honorable Mbanza, has raised relating to under expenditure. Because in some instances in quarter two and three, you indicated your frustrations and difficulties around matters of ICT. You indicated your difficulties around the contract that had to around ICT be extended on a month-to-month basis because a new service provider could not be appointed. Now, in the report now, in the fourth quarter, when you look at the third quarter, when we're in Pretoria, the department reported that the ICT delivery, in as far as procurement of laptops and other enabling facilities are concerned, tools of trade, for the missions, the department said that problem is sorted out. It's resolved. There were delays, COVID, and there were delays around chips, and so on. But in the understanding, some of your reasons there say, relating to the same thing, say that there's understanding because the bid adjudication committee, as an example, could not meet in a face-to-face meeting. Now, the question will be, if the bid adjudication committee could not meet in a face-to-face meeting, why didn't they have a virtual meeting? because it will achieve the same objective. The objective was not a face-to-face meeting. The objective was for procurement to be speeded up so that it can be efficient service delivery on those particular matters. So that will be the question. There's another part around understanding where you speak about there being underspending as a consequence of the appreciation of the rand against other currencies. I think you can educate us better there, because my understanding is that when the rand appreciates against other currencies, there should be some arrangement with the national treasury, because it's a saving. That saving that arises as a result of the appreciation of the rand against other currencies should, between the department and the national treasury, be categorized in a particular way, so that when you come to auditing, it's not characterized or classified as underspending, because you don't control the rise and fall of the currency or the strength of our currency against other currencies in the world. If it's not yet done, I would request that, because it's going to happen in future, it's inevitable. We will have to, as a department, enter into some agreement with the National Treasury and the AG's office on how, from an auditing perspective, that matter has to be dealt with, because it's a reality you can't do away with. I also think that we must agree with a proposal, I think it's from Honorable Bergman, around whether the performance that you say is 100% around legal is against the practical delivery on the ground. So at some point, I think Honorable Bergman is right, that engagement will have to take place between those who are responsible for the legal, because there are many, many other issues that have been raised by many other individuals, organizations, and so on, around the delays of processing some of the matters that are legally related. Yeah, those are the issues from my side, DG. We over to you now and your team to respond to the issues raised.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'll try and deal with these questions in the order that they came, but also some of them are also intersecting. And perhaps just starting with the last issue you raised about indicators and performance, not only in relation to the legalization section, which I'll also touch upon, but we are engaging in a process to ensure that we do improve on what we measure. As you can see, a lot of what we do is in our indicators is process indicators. And that's partly due to the nature of what international relations does. It's very heavy on meetings, negotiations, and not as much on the back office work on research and those kind of issues. But we do need to focus on outcomes more. And we're going to be working with the Auditor General on DPME and others, so that in our planning ahead, we begin to develop targets and outcomes that will speak to what is achieved, what has not been achieved. In terms of the legalization issue, if I can just start there, because it's related, and I really take what yourself, Chair, and Andrew Bergman has said about legalization. It is a high priority project for us at the moment, and we need to ensure that this is the part of the department where we really interface with the public, and we need to ensure that customer excellence and customer engagement is really improved on that. So the history of that is that, there's a huge backlog that was accrued due to the shutdown during the COVID period when in-person contact to DIRCO was stopped. But that does not mean that the current practice is acceptable. So we've got a special project to turn around that unit to ensure that we get back to a situation where the maximum turnaround time should be 5 days. Now, that is an indicator that I think we should be looking at in future. Because what you have, you'll have 100%, because what we will be reporting on, it's a demand-driven service. So it will tell you that X amount of documents came in and X amount of documents were processed. But it doesn't tell us about the time period that has been taken to do that, and also in terms of the quality of that service. So we take that on board. It's not acceptable. And I do take the issues very seriously on this one. And we have a special project. And perhaps, you know, on the invitation to come and present to Parliament, we could come at some point where we can present on what progress has been done in terms of this special project that we are implementing currently. I mean, it's really geared at ensuring that we focus on customer excellence and that we get the turnaround time to something that is reasonable and in line with the fact that people are applying for apostilling documents because it's really necessary for people to access job opportunities, study opportunities, and other important matters. So I really take that as a very serious issue for us. So, and then also in terms of how we report on the indicators. So I take that point. The issue that Honorable Bergman raised on FATF, it's an important issue. We've been engaging with National Treasury, Department of Justice, and some other key stakeholders on how do we ensure that we don't get under the grey list. And we'll also then, you know, hopefully engage with the CEOs of industry as well. But essentially, the FATF was established mainly to engage, to stop money laundering. And then, you know, after 9/11 in the US and the UN Security Council resolutions that emerged from that, it also took on board within the financing space, the need to stop terror financing. And I think what we need to ensure is that we engage with our sister departments and particularly those in the financial regulation space, and we're also engaging with the Reserve Bank on this, to ensure that some of the loopholes that have been identified are closed and closed. Because we're also quite concerned about the potential of being grey listed and the impact of grey listing on our abilities to lend for development purposes, particularly from our financial institutions, but also in terms of sovereign funds and those kinds of issues are incredibly important. So we do take that. I know that there will be a detailed briefing quite soon by National Treasury on FATF. To Cabinet, and perhaps together with the National Treasury and DIRCO, we could perhaps also jointly at some point, discuss this with the portfolio committee itself. The FATF issues are not directly linked to the issues of sanctions. There's many countries on the sanctions list, and our financial institutions have generally complied with sanctions, even those that that South Africa as a country do not necessarily agree with, particularly those that are unilaterally implemented. But our financial institutions generally comply, and we've had a meeting with the Reserve Bank a few months ago on these matters as well. So I think that's a very important issue. On the very important issue again about visas that Honorable Bergman has raised, so I'm having a meeting with the Director General of Home Affairs to see to what extent we can unblock some of these issues that have been identified. There's definitely a reputational issue for South Africa, but also an economic issue where, you know, key investors, business people, but also people coming for conferences are finding it difficult to access visas. So we're having a meeting to see to what extent we can unblock that. And it's a very serious issue for us there, including looking at some of the visa-free proposals that have been made and what we can do together with them to unblock those issues. With regards to the diplomatic bags, again, I think that was also linked to people complaining about not accessing passports in time and passports getting lost or diplomatic bags not, the contract not being renewed. And we've also sought to deal with that quite speediously. So we now have a contract with DHL to ensure that we do fix that in the short term, but also to ensure that you know, a more longer term contract is in place to ensure that we do not experience the same kind of problems with the diplomatic bag that has been experienced. Just to underscore, the if we don't fix the home affairs issue, the principle of reciprocity will kick in, and countries will essentially begin to also make it difficult for South African to travel, whether we are business people or investors or just tourists. And I do think that we need to fix that quite urgently, Chair. In terms of our the issues around the visits that were reported in this quarter, I think the IPU visit to Ukraine was not in the quarter that is currently being reported on. It essentially took place in this financial year, which is the first quarter of this particular planning cycle. And we will sort of provide some feedback on that closer to the time. But also just to re-emphasize that we are essentially still guided by, and the question about negotiations and peace and the Russia-Ukraine issue that was brought up also and engaged with by Honorable Bergman, we are still seeking, and we've engaged with this with Secretary Blinken and others around the importance of negotiations to a lasting peace in that region. And we also emphasize that essentially this will only happen when the key powerful players globally, which includes the US and others, come to the party in terms of making sure negotiations happen. And that engagement with Secretary Blinken was very, very helpful. It was very good. And the spirit in which we engaged was well received by them and ourselves. And there'll be a follow-up meeting actually now between the President Biden and our minister and Secretary Blinken in Washington on these matters coming up in the first week just before UNGAS starts. So these will be followed up as well. I've covered the issues raised by Honorable Bergman on the on legalization. I think similar issues were then also raised by Honorable Mpanza on how do we improve the admin of the institution. And again, that is something that we currently now are addressing. That if we don't fix the institution, our abilities to do effective foreign policy will suffer, and even our abilities to do the political work will become a lot more difficult if we don't fix the administration. And that includes, you know, a range of issues from the ICT environment that has been raised, but also to staffing and the compensation of employees. These are issues that we are paying a particular attention to, and we will definitely also give feedback on how we engage with this. So with ICT, and I understand, Chair, you've also raised this particular one in terms of the underspending. We now are in this particular phase, have actually just undone some of those bottlenecks to ensure that we do deal with the delays. You know, the delivery of the tools of trade has taken place. Payments have been done. We have a delay currently, which is related to the network company, which has been appointed. So we will find that our ICT challenges will be dealt with within this financial year and quite quickly as well, because we do need our ICT environment to be exceptional, especially if we're going to move into a hybrid working relationship. Chair, there's a question was also asked by Honorable Panza about the missions closing process. We have now closed the missions that Cabinet approved, and that has also been approved by, you know, engaged with at Parliament level. What we're in the process of doing is ensuring that in closing those missions, that the level of engagement and service delivery does not suffer too much. And that means the appointment of non-resident ambassadors and, where possible, honorary consuls. But we also have to work, part of our meeting with Home Affairs on this is to ensure that we are able to ensure that consular services, and especially the issuing of visas, do not suffer too much in those countries where our physical presence has been closed due to the need to save just for cost-cutting purposes. Okay. Then Honorable Panza did raise the issue of the need for clean audits, and that is something that we're working on. We've developed and circulated to all missions and all staff a roadmap towards a clean audit, and this roadmap was engaged with our internal audit and also our external audit committee, and also engaging with the Audit General on this. Honorable Panza may be pleased to know that, in fact, for the past year, 2021-22, the department now has an unqualified audit, but we're saying that this is just the beginning. We need to translate that unqualified audit into a clean audit, and we need to work hard to do that. And that is, again, linked to the issue of the administration and effective management of our resources. Okay. In terms of the living conditions in our missions, Chair, I do think we need to come back and have a more in-depth discussion on that, because, you know, whether it's the infrastructure issues that are in question, but also the conditions of local resource personnel, or LRPs, which we have not been able to pay. We've been paying well, reasonably, and engaging with the minimum standards in each of those host countries, but increments have not been possible due to our compensation of employees ceiling issue. And we're also engaging with National Treasury on that issue. And we will also give feedback once the proposals we have made to them is either agreed to or not. Chair. And then, Chair, I think the issue that you raised on linked to how we report and the investors and the quantification of the investors and the nature of the investment. What we do through DIRCO in the economic components of diplomacy is seek to assist, different parts of government, including, the investment team from the presidency, DTIC, and others, to access potential partners so that we do have investment, whether this is for foreign direct investment or investment in infrastructure. Chair, the manner in which this then shapes the economy is obviously a concern for all of us. And I think the issues of equality and equity is something that DIRCO is concerned about, but is something that we would ultimately not be able to be the major player in terms of creating that impact. So we will work with sister departments to ensure that we do have the kinds of investments where possible that will make a difference, and how that essentially permeates through the economy, the subject of economic policy and distribution issues, which unfortunately is a little outside of our purview. But I do take the point that we need to look and quantify the nature of the investment, the nature of the agreements, the nature of the engagement that's in our domain, so that the portfolio committee has a better sense of how these will ultimately impact on economic growth. But just to save to say, I think the point here that's important is that going forward, we need to pay a lot more attention to the economic components of our diplomacy. And this is not unrelated to the political components, because essentially, if we don't build stability, peace, security, these are the root causes of underdevelopment, the root causes of why investors may shy away from investing in our country or the region. And I think that's why, in terms of, the plans, the MTEF plans, put South Africa, stable South Africa, Africa, and the globe, because the interlinkages between those three have been considered and factored into the planning framework. Yeah. I'm just trying to see if I've left anything out, Chair. Chair, the last issue is on the, you raised it as well, I think, on the difference between underspending and saving. And I take your point there, because at times when we are on the losing side of the rand, depreciating against the dollar, we do find ourselves with a cash shortage because of the manner in which we are budgeting, and it causes significant problems. One of our external auditors asked us to what extent we can do hedging, and the discussion between them and ourselves and National Treasury is that hedging is not possible, but it's also not desirable, because in essence, when one hedges against your own currency as the diplomatic face of that currency, you're signaling to the outside world that you do not have confidence in your own currency, and that could have a different impact. But essentially, I think the point that you've raised is we need to engage with Treasury about where we do gather savings because of the fluctuating currency markets, and it's in our favor that that savings should not be reflected as underspending. Chair, I think I've covered all the questions. I think the one issue that Honorable Bergman raised was on the meetings of the Middle East. I think the meetings that took place was one where the Palestinians brought their own heads of missions for a meeting in South Africa, or the African missions, and then there was a visit by our deputy minister to the region. But I don't recall a heads of mission meeting at headquarters called for example, our DDG. But I can follow that up as well. So if I have missed anything out, please point that out to me, and I can answer them. I thought I should just answer all of those, and especially there where they complement each other. Thank you, Chair. Over to you.
Okay. Thank you very much, DG Dango. Just before we get into the African Renaissance Fund, there's two hands here. House Tembi, followed by Honorable Swartz.
Well, thank you very much, Chairperson. You know, I've been listening to the responses by the DG, and I don't think they are quite satisfactory. When we arrived in this committee in 2019, the issue of diplomatic bags was one of the most burning issues, and we were informed that, yes, the current contract had expired, and we are 3 years down the line, and nothing has been done to date. So I think the pace at which this matter is moving is very slow or unwilling to be resolved. Maybe we should look at then who is then given the job to execute the diplomatic bags, and what are they benefiting from this, and why is it not being properly allocated to a proper contractor or a proper contract? Because since 2019, we are hearing the same thing. It's the same as what happened with the ICT company, where we ended up having to have a look who is the beneficiary of this ICT company, because it just remained a stigma that was not willing to move out of our to-do list. And then, apart from reducing the missions, as highlighted by Honorable Mpanza, the issue of the property management unit, Chairperson, is not strongly emphasized yet again. And I don't know, as a committee, what are we saying about this? Because when it was still the acting DG, who is now a DGGIC on the list of participants, she was acting DG Losi. They had started a asset register and given us a list of which assets were going to be disposed, which assets were going to be renovated, and there was a nice map or road plan on what is to be done, and all that now has fallen into the cracks, and we are not hearing anything about property of the department anymore. Thirdly, Chairperson, in the previous presentations before this one, the department reported that we were owing Home Affairs. What has happened to that debt? Has that debt been paid off? Or what is currently happening to the debt by this department to Home Affairs? And then also, Chairperson, there's a serious issue which I've referred to the DG, and he's been trying to resolve that issue, but the response that I received back was that the South Africans are being granted, are not being granted visas, or are being granted visas by the US in a very slow pace. And these are students who have bursaries, who have sponsors, who need to actually get on and go and study abroad as per their wish in the United States. But I don't know whether it's by ethnicity or by color that these, maybe we can get an explanation from the department that what is the holdup with the American embassy in granting our people visas? Or are we then in a red list with the America? Why are we not being granted visas? Because it goes to what Honorable Beckman was saying, that we should, you know, do away with some countries having visas. But they are making our lives difficult. Some countries are really undermining South Africa to the point that they will not reject your visa, but they will take their own sweet time for them to even respond to your application of a visa. Our people are suffering, Chairperson, outside, especially young Black people wanting to go abroad. These Westerners are just playing hard on them, and they don't grant them visa. The last one, Chairperson, is to go to the communications of department, which is the PR. I don't think the PR of DOCO is really doing enough. We've had, you know, utterances by the MEC of Limpopo to a foreign national woman who was in hospital. And the country went amok. The country, you can say, was divided because some are supporting Lossie. I mean, some are supporting Poppy. Some are not like us. We were not supporting the statements made by Poppy. And I believe that Durko should have stood up and brought clarity on a matter on the behavior of that MEC, because it is an international relation issue. It is a relations issue with Zimbabwe. And it should have been brought into, you know, some countries when there's contradictions on things like, I would call it xenophobia, for lack of a better word. But Durko should have, you know, this thing is escalating, and I'll keep raising this in this committee. Why don't you have an advert or something, or some way of informing people that the way you are treating foreign nationals in this country is incorrect? Why don't you have a way of advertising, or maybe just a way of teaching South Africans how to unite as an African? Because what we preach when we meet the African government, the president and everything on a high level is different to how we perceive and allow society to relate with each other. When we go and meet Mnangagwa, we sit down with him, have coffee, we discuss trade, we discuss everything else, but issues that are really common to the people that don't sit in those high level. So we are not doing much, Chairperson, to address the issue of the how Africans are divided and how do we unite Africans, because there are treaties that we are busy trying to sign. There are treaties of free movement of people, which we are trying to implement as Agenda 2060. But we are not out there making noise and trying to educate society. However, we are just silent and condoning statements which are clumsily made and in an incorrect platform, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Okay, Honorable, thanks, Ustembi. Honorable Swartz.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and good morning to all the members and the officials and the DG. I'm sorry, Chair, I joined late. I had a SCOPA AG's report meeting, but I then later logged on to two gadgets. I joined in just when the two last members were honorable members were making inputs. But mine, Chair, is more on comments on the DG's responses. Chair, mine, I just want to ask a layman's question. Did the DG, the current DG Dango, get handover reports from the acting DG who was in place? And did he see a handover report from the previous DG to the acting DG? Because, Chair, really, we are just going in circles. I just feel at every meeting, we are just discussing things that we discussed in 2019 when we arrived here in Parliament. And, Chair, today I am pleading to this department to please go back to their minutes. If they do not have, they must go and look for recordings. Because we can't, Chair, just sound as broken records over the property issue. And over the property issue, we are not going to stop. Because the property issue affects properties around the world. Our properties here in South Africa themselves. I'm going to tag on to what Honorable Msane just raised now. That we requested, Chair, when we arrived here, in fact, at our first oversight meeting, we gave the department an idea that they should start having a milestone report on the property. But when they come here, they're always giving us things in drips and drabs. I am also interested still that today, when they gave us a report to dispose of properties, the current acting CFO then gave us a report. We queried that report that how do you dispose of properties? Who evaluated the properties? That is where we even arrived on the structure. And we're even querying that why do we have the property section under finance? Now, Chair, it is so disheartening that I no longer read the report because I know what the department is going to say to us and what their responses are going to be. And today the DG has spoke that they can come and present to us on how they are improving. Chair, that is not good enough. I expect that this department at this stage, when they are presenting to us, it must be a standing item where they are giving us what they've improved on from what we have said in previous meetings. But if they are always going to wait for a certain presentation where they are going to present something to us, and then try and update us. It is so no good enough, not at all. Now, I'm not even excited that the Foreign Service Act bill has come into place because this bill, this department did not want, but it is here now. And we have told them last year that they must start preparing that when that Foreign Service Act bill gets in place, they must have already taken handover reports from the Department of Public Works. Now, Chair, if this department wants us to go and fetch archived letters, of which we have, from the time of the late Honorable Zola Skweyiya, we'll do that. So that we show this department that they lie through their teeth when they say that Public Works was solely handling rentals and everything for them. The letter did not say that. And in the next meeting, I want to read this letter to the committee in the presence of these officials so that we get to the bottom line of the property issue. Because they are making us to go and look for things that have, which are even in the Parliament archives. Because there were committees before us. There were minutes before us. There are minutes of the fifth parliament, of the fourth parliament, of the third parliament. So this is not a new issue, Chair. Now, Chair, I am pleading again that this department, when they report to us, Chair, it's like we are starting a new department. It has never existed. It can't be, Chair. It cannot be. Now, I am pleading with the DG that the people he found there in place, they are still here. They are not dead. They are alive. Some of them are in this meeting. 60% of them are in this meeting. They've always been attending meetings. So they must assist DG Dango. But what we have always been raising. And if it means that our staff from Parliament must assist DERCO department to wake up to things we have been raising, because it can't be chaired that as this committee, we are going to get to the end of this term and not be able to say we have achieved one thing, just one single thing. Because the ICT issue does not also excite me. It took us many meetings of fighting. So I don't know what else is it that we must fight for up until we achieve it without actually getting the department to pull its weight. And this department cannot understand. It can't be checked. This department is always saying they don't have money, they can't reach this target, they can't do that. Then it means check. The quicker there is a CFO that comes into place, the quicker we are going to have proper budgeting, the quicker we are not going to have underspending. But I'm not excited over anything, Chair. It's very disappointing all the time, and it can't be. And even when we ask, Chair, that there must be a specific meeting that deals with specific issues, we have over and over and time again asked that, can we just have a presentation on this? Today we are again pleading with the department and you, through you, Chair, that can we have a committee meeting that just deals with properties? So that we start with the MOUs they had with public works, with the letters that were signed off by previous ministers, which now where we have the Foreign Service Act Bill, but now where we have requested DERCO to get the people with the skills in properties, in real estate, and how they are going to even work with the PMU so that there's a quantity surveyor involved, so that there's an engineer involved, because the property issue has got a lot of things that must come with it. But we can't share all the time. If we can go back to recordings, some of us, the recordings will be just the same like what we are raising today. There will be no difference. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, for giving me the opportunity, even though I joined late.
No problem, Honorable Spars. Honorable Chetty, you are the last. That is it. Okay, over to you, DG.
Sorry, I've got my hand up as well, please.
Who is this one now?
Honorable Bergman.
Do you want to do Pindam Zala?
Yes, please.
Right here, Pindam Zala. Okay. Honorable Mpanza, you also want to do Pindam Zala? I see your hand is up. Okay, Honorable Darkman. Proceed, my brother.
Yeah, thank you very much. I think with it being Women's Month or the last day of Women's Month, I must agree with my sisters that, I think the days of lazy or scared politicians is over. You know, we have to apply our minds. And the judges in the last two cases, especially with, the last two court cases and the Zondo Commission, has said that Parliament has to use the power of oversight to ensure that our departments are working, and we mustn't be scared to use the power of Parliament to do our oversight, and that we must do our oversight without fear and without favour. And I'm going to insist that, first of all, I'm even allowed to, as a member of Parliament, I'm allowed to walk into DERCO and I'm allowed to oversight any department within DERCO. And that's my right as a member of Parliament. So I'm not sure what Honorable Mpanza is worried about. I'm not sure what's upset Honorable Mpanza, but I'm not scared to do my job. And my job is to protect South Africans, and my job is to protect officials that work within the department, and I'll do that without fear, and I'll do that without favor. I'll do that for the benefit of South Africans. Secondly, Chair, I'd like to agree with you, and I think it's an important point, that South Africans mustn't be classed as whether what gender, what race they come from, but then we must protect South Africans on whether they can eat or not eat, or whether they have the right to or access to money or to shelter or food. And where we're working towards now, Chair, is that everything that we do within this committee must be to protect those that cannot protect themselves, or to ensure that we can put food on the table of those that cannot eat. And that's how we must look at it. We mustn't worry about the rich people, Chair. The rich people are going to look after themselves. The rich people can take their money offshore. The rich people can protect the rich people can, yes, you know, eh? The rich people can protect their money in offshore accounts. They can worry about dollars. They don't have to worry about rands. It's the people here. It's the people that we worry about here that have to eat in rands, that have to buy food in rands, that have to eat the grain and rice here and purchase the grain and rice in South Africa. They don't know color. They know no race. They know no gender. These are the people here that we have to protect. And I agree with you. We have to know what quality we're providing for people here in South Africa based on the economy here. And the only way we know the quality is by a report, a simple report called the UNDP report. And if you take that online, if you look at the UNDP report, you will see that South Africa is ranked on the UNDP report. You can look at the countries that are above us. You can look at the countries that are below us. Interestingly enough, though, Chair, I must tell you that Palestine and South Africa are actually very, very close to each other. We have the same quality of education. We have the same quality of water, electricity. The only difference is that a Palestinian child born today will live 10 years longer than a South African child. But what we need to look at as a South Africa is the quality of life that a South African has when born today in South Africa, and how we can improve the quality of life of a South African born in South Africa. But agreeing with my sister from the EFF, how do we portray anyone living in South Africa, anyone that has a right to live in South Africa, regardless of where they came from originally?
I think your network is failing you,
Honorable Zimbabwe. We have to flee to
Marol Darman, I think your network
in exile. How do we reflect on how we treat their people?
Being in a forest.
If we treat our government, our visitors or people that are on this problem. Sorry, Chair, I'll just try once more for the DG just to say that it was the Deputy Minister's visit. Sorry, DG, it was the Deputy Minister's visit. Thank you very much.
Okay. It's okay. We don't have time to get into some of the issues now. There's a proposal which I think we need to agree to, that as a committee, as a matter arising from this fourth quarterly report, we must call a special meeting to deal with and only focus on that item, on matters of property relating to the department. I haven't had anybody opposing that. So it means those two proposals that were made, one by Honorable Bachman and Honorable Swartz, we will follow up on them. Honorable Msani also made the proposal that we need to look at some of the commitments the department made to the committee, so that we can deal with them, including the diplomatic bags and so on. Ndade Dango, over to you now, and then you can immediately after dealing with the responses migrating to the African Renaissance Fund.
Thank you, Chair.
We're left with an hour.
Thank you. I'll be quick. I'll keep my camera.
It's an hour. We also have to deal with our own program here. So we have about 30 minutes. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. I'll keep it short, and I'm also keeping my camera off for the bandwidth issues, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, it's okay.
Okay. I think that on the asset management and property thing, the special meeting would be welcomed. Obviously, in this meeting, we didn't focus on that, given the nature of the report. But I take the aside from the special meeting, the suggestion that we need to make it a standing item, irrespective of when we report and the issues that we report. And I think, given the importance of this issue, in terms of the Foreign Services Act that has been asked by both Honorable Samsani and Honorable Sport, I think that, you know, the Foreign Services Act is in place, and we do have a draft plan that we were working on. And again, Chair, you know, we didn't have the time to go into the details of that plan today, but we can also share that with the portfolio committee at any time. I think it is an important piece of legislation, and that we welcome it, and that we need to implement it speedily, Chair. Chair, I think Honorable Msani also been asked very specifically around the the issues of comments made by an MEC in Limpopo, the duty of what we've done, Chair, and I take the point and I appreciate the point about perhaps the manner in which we could have engaged publicly with it. But what we did was, specifically in our domain, was to meet with the representatives of the government of Zimbabwe, and to clarify that this is not a government position, and to also outline that, apology was tendered from our side on this. It's a big issue, Chair, that we need to discuss further. Essentially, these issues are, as Honorable Sanders correctly pointed out, is impacting on our image on the continent, and particularly the leadership role that South Africa has historically enjoyed. But we, in our domain, engage with our counterparts on the continent on a regular basis on these issues, Chair. Honorable Sani also raised the issue of the U.S. and the visas. We are engaging with the new ambassador. We've had two meetings on these issues now, and he's given us a commitment to speed up the issuing of visas from their side. They've also had a backlog. They've assured us that there's no specific punishment for South Africa, and that we also raised in particular our concerns that in some cases it may have appeared that there may have been a racial dynamic in some students getting visas quicker than others. We've raised this with them. They've assured us that this is not the case. Chair, it also means that the reciprocity issues come into play. We need to engage with the Department of Home Affairs to speed up delayed visas from our side for U.S. people, including those in the Peace Corps volunteers that have been delayed coming over, because we on our side have also been delaying these visas. But with all countries we engage on the visas issues, we need to ensure from our side we speed up and process these visas. And as Honorable Bergman correctly pointed out, this is not technically Virgo's domain, but it has an impact on us. The first port of call when there is a problem with the visa is actually Virgo's. So that's why on both sides we've decided, you know, with the Department of Home Affairs, we will engage to ensure that we can speed these issues up, Chair. I think the additional comments from Honorable Bergman essentially were comments and not really questions for me to engage with, Chair. Thank you.
Yes. Migrate to ARS.
Thank you, Chair. So I'll hand over now to my colleague, Ms. Nklako, to please do the presentation.
Good morning, Chairperson and Honorable Members.
As the chair had requested, we will get into the core issues.